The following paid program does not represent the views of North Shore 104.9. Welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. This morning during the program, your host, Mark Friedman, may discuss specific financial planning and investment ideas. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Financial planning and investment advice is offered through Friedman Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor located in Peabody, Massachusetts. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, a member of FINRA and SIPC. Friedman Financial is a separate entity from LPL Financial. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Always consult a certified financial planner professional, qualified attorney, or tax advisor prior to investing to determine what is appropriate for you. And now, here's the host of Dollars and Cents, Mark Friedman of Friedman Financial.
Good morning and welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. How are you doing this Sunday morning? It is mid-part of April. Tax season is far beyond us. Hopefully, you filed your taxes on time and didn't have to worry about filing that extension. We're happy to hear that many people were able to do that without a problem. I think many of people have found that, you know what? Filing your taxes isn't nearly as hard as you thought it was. Picking up that TurboTax or that Quicken or all the different types of tax softwares that are out there. For many people, it's not that hard. And the software that's out there is quite intuitive. In fact, if you thought it was easy this year, wait till next year. Because taxes are about to get a lot easier to do, unless you, of course, have one of these complicated tax systems. But for the most of us, filing your taxes is even going to be easier next year. Did you get a refund? Did you have to owe taxes? Were you surprised that maybe you owed money to the state, but you got a refund from the federal government or vice versa or whatever it was? I will tell you, in all of those situations, whether you got a refund or whether you owed taxes, it wasn't your accountant's fault. People tend to blame their accountant to say, oh my God, I owe so much taxes, I must have to get a different accountant. Folks, understand that taxes are just a checks and balances system. If you didn't have enough withheld from your pay stubs along the way, then chances are you owe taxes at the end of the year, not your accountant's fault. If you happen to buy investments and they pay dividends or there's capital gain distributions or you sold securities, you're going to owe taxes on some of that stuff. That's not your accountant's fault. You just have to understand what it is that you sold for. One of the things, though, that we came across, and as financial planners at Friedman Financial, where we're located at 41 Cross Street in Peabody, we are comprehensive financial planners. And so well beyond the investment advice that we offer to our 450 households, and of course, any of the listeners that are tuning into our show today, we also offer financial advice in a lot of other different areas. And one of those areas is tax planning. No, I don't do tax returns. I could. I do know how to do them, but I've chosen not to do that. But I do look at people's tax returns and I help them understand why they may be able to do something different with their overall financial situation to save themselves some tax money, or perhaps help them understand why they owed so much more taxes this year. Well, it's rather interesting, and perhaps you may have found yourself in this situation, is many people move accounts. People have become more and more had this tendency to move accounts from one brokerage firm to another brokerage account, whether it's from Fidelity to Merrill Lynch to LPL Financial to Charles Schwab to Janus to whatever. We move our accounts to different places. And generally, if you move from brokerage account to brokerage account, let's say from, I don't know, from UBS to Royal Alliance, if you move in those types of manners, oftentimes you move your accounts what's called in kind, which means you don't want to sell the investments to move it to the next brokerage firm. You move everything as is. And then when you move everything as is, once it gets there, perhaps you may sell something along the way. Well, here's part of the problem that many individuals don't realize. And unless it's brought to your attention by your financial advisor, you could find yourself with a very large tax bill around tax time. And that's because, let's say, for instance, you inherited some stock from, we'll just grab General Electric. You inherited some stock from General Electric from your parents. Maybe they passed away in the 90s. Just grabbing a number there. And you've held that General Electric stock for a long time, and now you've seen, oh my God, General Electric's gone up, it's gone down, and you move the account from where you had inherited it from. I'm using an example here. Let's say it's UBS, and it moves now to Merrill Lynch. So you've moved your General Electric stock from UBS to Merrill Lynch. It's sitting there on the statement, and it still says 1,000 shares of General Electric stock, and it has a value of whatever that value would be. And you say to your broker, or the broker suggests to you, I want to sell that stock. Or, geez, that stock's been performing lousy, I want to sell the stock. And you sell it. Great. You can do that. You know, you get cash for it. And that all works fine until it's time to file your taxes. Because when you file your taxes, the accountant says to you, or you find out If you're doing it on TurboTax or one of these tax planning softwares, it says, well, what did you pay for it? And you basically says, I don't know. And so you skip it. I don't know. So you figure, well, I'll come back to it or I skip it. And so what ends up happening is if you don't put in the amount that you what you paid for it or what was what's called the cost basis, what you received it at, the IRS is going to assume that your cost is zero. So that means that if you sold General Electric stock, and using that just purely as an example, at, say, $20,000 and your cost basis was zero, your tax return is going to say you owe taxes on $20,000. Now, that's not what you may wanted it to do, or perhaps you didn't even know that you'd owe taxes on it. But the problem is many people find themselves with a larger than necessary tax bill simply because they didn't place the cost basis for their investments into their analysis when they submitted the tax return. There's a thing that says gross proceeds. That's the amount of money that you received. And then there's a column that says cost basis, what you paid for it, or purchase cost, what you paid for it. But we just used in the example, you just inherited this money in 1990. So what is your cost basis? You didn't even buy it. Do you know what your cost basis is? Chances are your cost basis is what the value of the stock was when you inherited it upon your parents' death. Whatever the date of death was, that could generally be your cost basis. So let's say you inherited it at $15,000 and today it's worth $20,000. Remember before in the earlier example, I said you had it at a value of $20,000, but you didn't know what you paid for it. You put it at zero. So you would have had to pay tax on $20,000. But actually, if you had actually put the date of death and you realized it was $15,000 of what it was worth when mom and dad died, you'd only have to pay tax on $5,000. That is a lot more palatable, a lot more understanding, and a lot more normal. I mean, that's what you have to do. You have to put that stuff through. The problem is it's generally on you to identify what that cost basis is. Now, in our office at Friedman Financial, when we pick up new business, when people transfer their accounts over to us, even moving things in kind, perhaps, for instance, you have stock certificates sitting in your safe deposit box that you say, oh, I want to put those also into the account because I want to get them out of the safe deposit box. We at Friedman Financial work with you to help you identify what that cost basis is because we know at some point you may be selling the stock. And wouldn't it make sense if we're going to give you advice to sell a stock, shouldn't it be based upon, yes, whether the stock is worthy to hold in your account, but also give you the understanding of what would the tax liability be if you were to sell it? That is oftentimes a missed part of some of the analysis that gets done for all too many clients and all too many people here in the community. It's too important. This is costing you money. You see, we got to be smart with the way we take money and the way we use money and the way we pull from our accounts to support our lifestyle. We have to be thoughtful. We have to understand the rules. And oftentimes, as Marion says, you don't know what you don't know. And Marion, I'm referring to as my business partner, is that we see all the time people will come to us and say, well, I know what the rules are, but they really don't. They know the rules based upon what their colleague or friend told them, which might have been appropriate to their friend or colleague, but isn't relevant to your situation. You need to change that up. You need to be willing to be open to understanding about your situation so that you make the smartest possible moves. You know, doing taxes is a frustrating thing. And your ability to track it, report it, present it properly will allow you to maximize any of the tax benefits that are available to you so that you pay your fair share and only what you owe, not more than it. I think I told you the story of about a month and a half ago, we had someone come into my office and she was crying. She was really crying because she was upset that she got a letter from the IRS regarding her 2016 tax return filing. And she said that she got a letter from the government saying that she owed $40,000 in taxes. And she was floored, $40,000 in taxes. She's crying and she's saying, but Mark, I pay my taxes every year. I've never tried to defraud anybody. I don't know what this is all about. Are they coming after me? I don't want to go to jail. I'm all worried. And they said, you need to pay this penalty, this tax and the penalty within the next 2 weeks. And she's freaking out. How am I going to do this? Why do I owe this? And she's crying and crying and crying and crying. And we see this a lot, frankly. And I knew exactly what the problem was going to be. You see, before she moved her account to our office, she had an account, she had an investment that was worth $200,000. And she sold it before it came to us. And when she got the 1099 from the previous brokerage firm, it basically said that she sold something for $200,000, but didn't show what she paid for it. And so the IRS assumed that she owed taxes on an extra $200,000 in capital gains because she showed zero for her cost, $200,000 for what she got, and thus she owed close to $40,000. And I helped her understand that the reason that it didn't show it, she actually inherited this money, this stock, from her mother, who had died in 2016. The actual value of the stock when she inherited it was $210,000. And so when she sold it for $200,000, she actually should have gotten a tax loss of $10,000. But she didn't know that because it wasn't reported to her on her 1099. And so she just put in, and when she gave it to her accountant, the accountant just assumed it was zero. So we had to go work with her to file an amended tax return. And rather than her owing $40,000, she actually had a small refund coming back to her. Now, I'm not an accountant. I didn't have to do the the tax return was done by the accountant a second time with the proper numbers, but we were able to mitigate the challenges that she was facing because we were able to talk it through with her to give her an understanding of why would the IRS present that. The IRS wasn't pointing a finger at her saying, "You're an idiot. You did this wrong." It's just a matter of her not understanding the tax forms that came to her and not being able to articulate to her accountant what was missing from the tax form. How would she know that? She wouldn't. But if the brokerage firm didn't know it either or wasn't providing it to her, there was no way for her to know. So we worked it through and it all happened. Folks, if you're finding yourself owing a significant amount of taxes this year, more so than you've ever had to pay before, make sure that you understand why. But here's the bigger challenge. See that letter that she got that said she owed $40,000? People get letters like that all the time because they simply don't know. They simply didn't report their taxes properly on their returns, and so they get this notice that you owe $4,000 more to the IRS plus a penalty, or else. And do you realize how many people actually write those checks and send them to the IRS because it's the IRS? They're scared. The woman that came to see me was ready to go down to the bank and withdraw $40,000 from her bank account because she figured she had no other choice. Folks, you got to be careful. We're talking about your money here. Working with your money in the world of personal finance today is far more complicated than it ever was decades prior. There's a lot of nuances, a lot of things that you understand, and the reporting that's necessary needs to be done properly so that you can benefit in the most, but then the best possible way for your situation. You got to be careful. You need to be careful and you need to know what you're doing. If you're trying to go at this on your own, you certainly can. And many people are very, very capable of doing it. But far too often we see folks that say as they're approaching their retirement years, "You know what? I've been doing this on my own and I've finally become to realize that this may become a little bit more complicated and or frankly just time consuming. And I don't want to worry about this stuff anymore. I want to enjoy my retirement. I want to do the things that I'm supposed to do and delegate responsibilities to others." Because recently, look, we've gone through some challenging times in the stock market. It's been both up and down. You've seen reports that move the stock market daily because of some news piece, whether it's a lawsuit, whether it's tariffs, whether it's bombing in Syria, whether it's Greece or Brazil or whatever it might be. There always seems to be something. And the markets move in reaction to that. Should you be concerned about that? Should you be concerned? Well, there's a lot to understand. And one of the things that we try to do here on this radio show is deliver you financial advice in a language you can understand. When we get back, I'm going to share some stories that I have from a meeting that I went to a couple weeks ago regarding performance of investments and really how to start thinking about your investment accounts and what is the right allocation. How do you structure your portfolio appropriately? How worried should you be about the volatility in the market? Lots of questions to ask, and we'll provide some answers, frankly, some financial advice in a language you can understand. And we'll do that when we get back. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. Hi, this is Mark Friedman, president of Friedman Financial and host of Dollars and Cents, heard here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. Each week, I try to provide listeners with financial advice in a language you can understand. And much of my advice comes from real-life situations that happens in my office, Friedman Financial, each and every day. You see, at Friedman Financial, we help individuals and families create smart strategies for spending money in retirement. Our approach is committed to placing your interests first. And best of all, Friedman Financial is independent, and we're a fee-based financial planning and investment management firm. We're absolutely committed to helping you get your financial house in order. When you're ready to get serious about your financial planning needs, give us a call at 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108, or on the web at friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com.
Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Friedman Financial, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
If I had $1 million.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I am president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts. We've recently celebrated our 50th. Yes, that's right. 50th. Is that, that's such a word. The 50th anniversary of providing financial planning and investment advice to individuals and families living on the North Shore, the Merrimack Valley, and the Southern New Hampshire area. It is amazing to me to think that the practices, the techniques, the philosophy, the culture, the styling that my father taught me as I grew up in this business. My dad started the firm in 68. I was only 2 at the time when dad started this thing. It's amazing that all of those lessons have remained time-tested. 50 years of putting what we believe is the right strategies in place, the right advice to work so that we're placing your interests first, has continued to work for 50 years. Now, I'll be very clear. We do not prefer to do business with small business owners. Frankly, I'm a small business owner, and I'm equally as much of a pain in the neck to work with as somebody else would be. I want to deal with the individuals, with the families that are fighting and trying to figure out the financial strategies that they need to support themselves in retirement, because it's daunting. For the first time in your life, you're going out and you're saying, oh my goodness, I do not have a paycheck coming in anymore. I have to make a decision around whether I should take Social Security, at what year, what time, when should I take it? Perhaps you have a pension decision to make. Should I take what's called the life-only option, the largest amount that's available to you, but if you drop dead, your spouse gets nothing? Or should I take what's called a survivor option? Should I consider an annuity strategy? There's all these advisors that are knocking on my door telling me I need annuities or I need to buy a long-term care insurance policy. Is that appropriate for you? Lots of questions to ask. Do you need a rebalancing to your investment portfolio? Is your investment structure too costly? How are you going to take money out of your investment account when you need $10,000 to replace the hot top on your garage, on your driveway, I mean? Where are you going to get the money from? Do you have the right amount of money in your bank, in an investment account, in an IRA? Do you know what to do when you turn 70 and a half and you have to start taking money out? Will you take out the right amount? And God forbid you've got 4 or 5 different retirement accounts scattered with all your previous employers or different IRAs or with different investment accounts, and you approach 70 and a half. And now you're forced to have to take money from your IRA, and you go, which account do I take it from? How do I do this? Because perhaps you know this or not, but there's a 50% penalty if you take the wrong amount, or if you take an amount lower than what is necessary from your IRAs when you turn 70 and a half. Let's just talk about that for a minute. A lot of people ask me, Mark, when do I need to take money? I've heard that I can take it the April following my 70 and a half birthday. You can, but my general rule of thumb, and this is, I use very few rules of thumb in this business, but my general rule of thumb is, when you, the year in which you turn 70 and a half, let's say you turn 70 and a half in October, that is the year when you take your required minimum distribution. That is because if you waited until the April following your 70 and a half birthday, that would push you into the following year, right? Because you were, let's say it's October of this year, October 2018, you turn 70 and a half. The April following your 70 and a half birthday would be in 2019, wouldn't it? Well, if you waited to take that first distribution in 2019, you'd actually have to take 2 that year, because you'd be taking your 2018 distribution in 2019, and you'd also have to take your 2019 distribution that year. My advice is the year in which you turn 70 and a half, take your minimum distribution. Lots of weird rules around distributions, especially if you've passed away. Well, if you've passed away, you're not really hearing this part of the show. At least I don't think so. But you never know, right? Who knows? Who knows? Maybe I have listeners up there or down there. Who knows? Who knows? At any rate, though, if you are the beneficiary of an IRA where someone had passed away, you may be responsible for taking what's called a minimum distribution from that deceased person's IRA. And there's a lot of rules around that. You want to make sure you're doing this right, because still the 50% penalty still applies if you don't take it out properly. So lots of things that we can talk about, especially if you find that this is an issue within your family, within your household. That's the type of advice that we offer to you, along with the rest of the comprehensive advice going into an overall financial plan. If you'd like to schedule a free initial consultation in our office, give me a call, 978-531-8108. No, that is not the number for the radio station here. This is my office number, 978-531-8108. Nobody is there to take your call today, but our answering machine does work. You'll leave a message for Jody, my assistant. If you leave a message there, she will get back to you, call you to see how we can help you. She may put you on the phone with me, and we can talk through your little situation. We can maybe answer a question or two for you. And if you'd like, if we think that it's appropriate for you to come in for an initial consultation, no cost to you, we will set it up for you. We have some openings right now in the months of April and in May. Now that tax season is behind us, things, we got a little bit of a lull. Still busy, but still have some openings and opportunities to meet with many of you. It's a great time to have someone give you a second opinion on your tax return. Let's take a look at your overall tax return and see, was there something that you could have done better? One of the pieces of software that we keep in our office is this amazing tax planning comparison software. So what it does is it takes your tax return. I just type it in, dump it all in, and then it compares different what-if scenarios so that you can begin to plan for 2018, 2019. It says, if you had taken money from here rather than here, how might have that changed your tax liability? Now, many people begin to, as they seem to forget in many cases, that when you take money from your IRA, that is taxable and perhaps even subject to a penalty. But if you take money from your personal investment account, the tax liability may be significantly lower. If you take money from a bank account, you know what the tax liability is? Zero. Nothing. If you have, let's say, $50,000 in the bank and you say, I want to pull out $5,000 and take it to Vegas. Nice, I guess. How much tax do you have to pay when you take the money out of the bank? Zero. Zero. But if you said, I want to take $5,000 out of my IRA and bring it to Vegas, well, that $5,000 is going to be taxable to you. Probably $1,000 of it probably has to go to taxes. So do you want to take $6,000 to get $5,000? Or do you want to take $5,000 and know at some point you're going to have to owe $1,000? And you might say to yourself, I'm not worried about it. I'm going to Vegas. That $5,000 is going to $50,000. Well, good luck to you. I'm not advising you to do that. That's not likely to happen. In fact, you probably have an equally good chance of just playing the numbers. And how's that working for Muggs here on the station radio lately? I think Muggs has been playing the numbers since January 1st. They've been calculating his tally. I think he's at $24 right now, but I think he's probably spent $300. Honestly, I don't know what he spent, but when I helped him host the show last Friday, he told me that he was at $24 is what his winnings was. So hopefully he'll do a little bit better, or maybe just stop buying scratchies, as he calls them. I used to call them scratch tickets. He calls them the scratchies. All right. Markets have been kind of up and down since the beginning of the year. What's strange, though, is that you see them can move anywhere from 100 points to 900 points in some days. I mean, in some days, the market starts out down 400 and ends up 300. That's a 700-point swing. Well, I went to this luncheon run by J.P. Morgan a couple weeks ago, and it was a luncheon that wanted to talk about evaluating the first quarter of 2018. And they put together this really great research booklet that talks about all different trends and everything that's happening. And one of the reports they do is they show you what's called a style box. And for many of you, if you don't know what a style box is, let me try to explain it to you, because it is really the basic premise for trying to understand how investments perform. I want you to imagine drawing a tic-tac-toe board. If you drew a tic-tac-toe board, you know there's nine blocks, right? There's the top row, the middle row, the bottom row, and then it goes horizontal, then it goes vertically the same way. Well, across the top row would be stacked called large, medium, and small. The large row stands for all of the huge companies out there in America. So you've heard of this term, the S&P 500. Those are the 500 largest companies that trade on the New York Stock Exchange and on all of the stock exchanges. That would be what would you call the large companies. Those 500 would fill up that entire top row. The mid row would, of course, be the next size company, which is probably another 1,000 or so. the next 1,000. And then the bottom row, which is the small caps, is the next 2,000. So think about it that way. Large, medium, and small. So you've got the rows going horizontally. Now go vertically. The row to the left is what's called the value row. The row to the right is called the growth column. And the middle is what's called a blend. So let me try to explain to you what value and growth mean. Value, the value column, means that you're a company. Look, every company that is part of those nine boxes is in business to make money. They want to turn a profit, right? I mean, that's what businesses do. They make money. They turn profits. They try to increase value to shareholders. But value companies might take much of their profit and return it to their shareholders in the form of a dividend. They're generally companies that aren't tremendously innovative. They've got a really good product or they've got a good idea, and they might make tweaks, but it's not totally innovative all the time. Think about companies like Caterpillar or an oil company or even a banking company. How much does a bank really change from year to year to year? They might get you a new app. Their rates may change, but you're still buying the same basic product, basic premise. So that fills the value side. On the growth side, you have generally technology companies, fancy healthcare companies. They're always coming up with something new. I used to use Pepsi as the best example. They're still a growth company. Pepsi used to take their profits and reinvest them towards paying celebrity spokespeople. Because think about Britney Spears and Michael Jackson and Cindy Crawford and all those people that used to be spokespeople for Pepsi. You can think about Google. You can think about Netflix. I mean, how many times have we had to adapt and change to all of the different ever-changing technologies, improvements, upgrades, etc., from those companies? Those are companies that are going to pay a smaller dividend but have the greater sense of growth potential. So what we're talking about is what style boxes are and how that all lays out and the nine different approaches that you can take to investing. That middle column is called the blend. Sometimes companies do a little bit of both, and so they fall in that category. So what's really interesting is over the course of the quarter, the first quarter, it was really interesting to see who outperformed who. What's interesting is for the quarter, the S&P 500, which was up big in January and then came back down in February and into March, ended the quarter down 0.8%. 0.8% for the quarter. Now, many people are thinking, oh my goodness, I saw that market go up 400 points, down 800 points, back and forth, and back and forth, and back and forth, and back and forth. But with all of that volatility, you ended up the quarter down 0.8%. You know what's kind of interesting? On average, the market moves 0.8% every day. I found that kind of fascinating. The market moves 0.8% every day. Now, it might start down, it might start up, or it might start up, go down. But on average, we look at the average over the past few years, the average movement in the stock market, in the S&P 500, is 0.8% as presented by the J.P. Morgan Asset Management Group in a report that they put out called The Guide to Markets, dated March 31st, 2018. So year to date, the S&P 500 as of March 31st was down 0.8%. Should you be concerned? Down 0.8%? How many people think the stock market's going down sometimes? I do. How many people think it's going up sometimes? Do you think that range of ups and downs is going to be 0.8%? No. You're not looking for a return of 0.8% up, nor are you looking for a loss of 0.8% down. It's going to vary. It's going to go up and down. So what's interesting, remember we talked about value and we talked about growth. Who's doing better, growth or value stocks for the first quarter? Well, interestingly enough, growth is outperforming value. Growth up on average 2% for the quarter. Value down 2.5% for the quarter. That's why we're down roughly 0.8% for the quarter if you balance them both out. But who's doing better, large, medium, or small? Now, that's kind of interesting because as we look around, we see, okay, who's likely to perform better, large, medium, and small on the short term and on the long term? I'm going to have that answer for you, but I'm not going to tell you now because we got to take a quick break. If you want to know who's performing well, what's going on in the markets, where you might want to be placing your money for the next 3, 6, 10, and 20 years, I'll have answers to those questions when we get back. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. I don't have one thing on my mind, one thing on my mind. I do it for the love. I don't have
What if you could blend the classic strategies of investing with a contemporary approach to financial planning? That's what Friedman Financial can do for you. Wherever you are along your financial journey, Friedman Financial has the skills, technology, and expertise to help you make smart financial decisions. Their team of certified financial planners will deliver an independent, objective, personalized plan for you. Let's make 2018 the year you get serious about your financial plan. Friedman Financial. Financial advice in a language you can understand.
Securities offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Friedman Financial, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
Money. Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman, President and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts at 41 Cross Street, just above the fabulous, tasty, absolutely delicious, and beautifully set Alto Forno restaurant on 41 Cross Street. If you haven't been there, stop in. You'll walk into this restaurant and you go, oh my God, who designed this place? It is unbelievable. Unbelievable. And then you got to try the food and you'll feel just as good. You will feel nourished. You will feel happy. The people that work there are just unbelievably friendly and professional. Love that. Don't you hate when you walk into a restaurant and you're totally ignored? I mean, you went there to be served. Isn't that why we go out to places? We go out to service places and then the service is ignoring you. You won't get that at Alto Forno. You won't get that at any of the Mamola restaurants, whether they're at Pilana, whether it's at Daniela's, whether it's at Alto Forno. They do a great job. Anyways, my office is upstairs on the second floor. Friedman Financial, we've been there for 9 months in that office, but we've been doing financial planning for 50 years. Hard to believe. April of this year, we celebrated our 50th anniversary. No, I was 2 years old when Dad started my business. I joined him in 1991. My business partner, Marion Gilman, joined us in 2000. And we have six people working in the office. Marion and I are the two primary financial advisors. We have 450 households for clients. We manage close to $400 million for our clients. And 90% of them live within 10 miles of the Treetop Studios right here at North Shore 104.9. I can also draw that same circle probably from my office in Peabody. We are a local firm. We focus on the needs of individuals and families, not business owners, not super wealthy individuals, not corporations, not not-for-profits. We want to deal with your needs, your personal needs, because we do know, because we've seen it so many times, that when that day comes to retire, when you start to think about planning for retirement, it is daunting. It is scary. It's intimidating because all of a sudden you are vulnerable. You're not getting a paycheck anymore. You wonder, have I saved enough money? Have I put enough money aside to supplement my income along with maybe the Social Security and pension check I might get? Can I do this? Will I run out of money? Our software models those answers to those questions, and it allows you to say to yourself, well, Mark, if I worked maybe four more years but only did it part-time, how would that help my situation? Or perhaps we'd like to sell our home and move to a smaller condominium. Or maybe we'd like to live half the time here in Peabody and spend half the time down in Boca Raton, Florida. Or I still have to help my kids out with some education costs. Or I'm still having to care for mom. Or lots and lots of questions. What's kind of interesting is you'll notice that we spend very little time on this radio show talking about specific investments, whether you should buy this or buy that, what's good, what's bad. That's because, frankly, at the end of the day, as long as you've built a generally good portfolio, stock selection, the individual security selection, it doesn't matter. You need proper asset allocation that aligns properly with your needs and everything else in your financial life. I don't know how Tesla is going to do or what GE is going to do or Pepsi or Google or Netflix. I frankly know probably as much as you do. And in both cases, my feeling and your feeling is going to be based upon a gut. How I feel about the company based upon an article I read or a headline I saw or an interview that I watched. I would much prefer to see you make investments in mutual funds, in exchange traded funds, where we transfer the risk of trying to pick individual stocks to a portfolio manager. Somebody who is responsible for building a portfolio that consists of 50 to 300 investments in that portfolio. And they do it every day, the same fund, all with the goal of trying to grow that portfolio for their shareholders. They don't have to worry about prospecting. They don't have to go find new clients. They don't have to fill out paperwork. They don't have to run an office. All they need to do is manage the investments and select the appropriate investments for that portfolio. They need to know when they're going to get in and when they're going to go out, when they're going to get out. They're going to go and visit the headquarters at Google or the headquarters at Tesla or Pepsi or Bank of America, whoever else it might be. They're going to have a team of people that are analyzing whether it makes sense to invest $60 million in Pepsi rather than you or I who might think about investing $6,000 in Pepsi. I think they're able to make better decisions. My job as a financial planner is to make sure that your money is getting introduced to the smartest people in the industry who I meet with, who Marion meets with, that we know are working hard to build that mutual fund, that exchange traded fund, that investment for you. Then we tie it all together and then take that portfolio, that investment account, and say, okay, how is that investment account going to integrate into everything else in your life? It's not about, oh, how did this fund do? Or should we buy emerging markets? Or should we buy large cap growth stocks? That's not what's important at this point, especially if you are a long-term investor. And one of the things that I promised I would talk about when we got back was this style box again. We talked about how there were 9 different ways in which to invest your money. There are a lot of ways to invest your money, but it basically comes down to 9 core principles in the stock market. You can either buy large companies, small companies, or mid-sized companies. You can buy value companies, growth companies, or a mixture of the two. And what we were saying is year to date through March 31st, it appears that the S&P 500 is down, get this, 0.8%. No, it's not down 10%. No, it's not down 16%. It's not up 15% either. If you watch the news based upon the headlines of the words plummet or soars or corrects or crashes or dives, you think your money's in for a real large roller coaster. Well, folks, if you invested all of your money in the S&P 500 on January 1st, which, by the way, you couldn't do because the market was closed that day, but if your money was invested on January 1st, 100% in the S&P 500, which nobody does, by the way, even though that's the measuring stick for everybody, January 1st to March 31st, the S&P 500 is down 0.8%. That is all. Value companies, though, versus growth companies, underperformed growth. Value was down about 2.5%. Well, growth companies were up around 2%. Thus, where we're coming up with that 0.8 number. But what's interesting is who performed better, large companies or small companies? Well, what's interesting is that the larger companies, the Netflix, the Googles, the Pepsis, the Bank of Americas of the world, as a collection, they slightly underperformed the smaller companies. The companies that are presumably more volatile, the more volatile companies did a little bit better. What's interesting is let's take a look at how what's happened since the market low of 2009. That's almost 10 years ago. 10 years ago, if you invested in the S&P 500 10 years ago, exclusively in the S&P 500 10 years ago, never added any money, never took any money out, you know you'd be up 372% right now. 372%. If you invested exclusively in growth companies, you were up around 400%. If you invested exclusively in value companies, you were up a little under 400%. Does it matter? What does matter is that you invest your money in a variety of different places. You don't just buy just all large tech companies. You want to build an asset allocation. And sometimes it's hard to do that. And it's even riskier if you choose to do it with individual stocks. That's why we at Friedman Financial build a portfolio that incorporates all of the elements of your financial life. It incorporates a portfolio that consists of large companies, small companies, mid companies, value companies, growth companies, international companies. Oh, and by the way, we also put money into fixed income securities, which we haven't even talked about, a variety of different types of bonds and other income producing investments so that you have a proper mix. And once you have that proper mix, do you know how often you need to change that portfolio? Rarely. And the only times you really do make a significant change to the portfolio is when you need to either rebalance your portfolio, meaning one of your investments, which you wanted to have, say, 20% of your money in this particular investment, and today it's worth now 25% of your portfolio. Do you know what that means? It means that if you're now worth 25% in that one investment, that means something else in your portfolio has underperformed. Now, wait a second. Oh, my goodness. We've talked about the fact that we buy low and sell high, but most people would want to say, but Mark, that account's up 5%. Why wouldn't we want to sell the dog and add it to the account that's doing well? That is a fool's game. We've always said we want to buy low and sell high. If we believe your portfolio is structured correctly, there are always going to be times when certain investments will be up and certain funds will underperform. But if you go through a full cycle, you know that all changes. It always changes. So you take some of the profits, add it to something that hasn't done so well. That works out well. So I came across this report from JP Morgan that I thought was fascinating. 2007, which was the peak of the S&P 500. 2007 was the last peak of the S&P 500. Market was going up. And then after that, it started going down, 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 down. Remember, we had the credit crisis. We had all sorts of things where March of 2009 was the lowest possible point in the markets. That's what they said. So if you had invested, if you had your money invested in the S&P 500 alone in October of 2007, you know that you would have lost a significant amount of money from October 2007 to March of 2009. We all know that. Everyone's heard the story. Lost about 45%. It's a lot. That's almost half. But how long did it take? If you left it alone, if you did absolutely nothing, how long did it take for you to recover to where you were? If you had money October 2007 and you went for the entire ride, both down and back up, you would have fully recovered in March of 2012, 5 years later. Now, is that palatable? Perhaps. It's certainly not as dramatic as everybody thinks. Well, Mark, you know, I can't buy green bananas anymore because I might die tomorrow. That's what some people do say. 5 years, that was the longest dip that we have seen in just the S&P 500. But here's what's even more fascinating. In our office and in most offices and in most persons, people's portfolio, you don't have all of your money in the S&P 500. You've been told to have a mix of somewhere between 50% stocks and 50% bonds. Maybe it's 40-60, maybe it's 60-40. We happen to rely in our office on a 60-40 portfolio for a lot of our clients. We find that that seems to be the right sweet spot. So let's imagine again where we go back to October of 2007, which was the peak of the S&P 500, and then the market dropped in March of 2009. If you had a 60-40 portfolio and you didn't add money or took money out of it, you just went for the ride, how long would it take for that portfolio to recover? Remember, we said the S&P 500, if you were 100% in the S&P 500, it would take you 5 years to recover. How long did it take a 60-40 portfolio? From October 2007, when the market was in its high, goes down to March 2009, you would have hit your recovery point on October 2010. That's right, October 2010. 3 years. Now, that's a lot of days. That's 1,000-plus days. But 3 years from best to best with all that worse that was in the middle. Think about that. When you're investing, how many people invest for 6 months or for a year? Generally, 3 years to 5 years is considered a longer term investment strategy. So if you had invested in a 60-40 portfolio in October of 2007, in October of 2007, you had invested in a portfolio, the market does go down, but how long would it take for you to recover to where you started from? It would have been 3 years. 3 years, you would have been back to even. 5 years, you would have made back even more. But what would happen if you were in the 40-60 portfolio? 40% in the stock market, 60% in the bond market. How long do you think it took to get back from that high? Well, that answer I'll share with you when we get back. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Ever wonder whether you'll have enough money to retire? Retiring for the Genius is a blueprint to prepare for a comfortable retirement. This easy-to-read guidebook on living your life in retirement is written by certified financial planner Mark Friedman and host of Dollars and Cents, heard here every Sunday morning from 8 o'clock until 9 a.m. You'll find the tools and templates helpful so you can prepare to make smart decisions on how to spend your money in retirement. If you're older than 55 and expect to spend between $4,000 and $10,000 a month in retirement, Retiring for the Genius is a treasure map for achieving your successful retirement. When it comes to retiring, don't be a dummy. Pick up a copy of Retiring for the Genius at Amazon.com.
Pick up your treasure map for retirement. Available now at Amazon.com. Search Mark Friedman, Retiring for the Genius.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. We've been talking money today. Money, can you make money? How do you make money? How do you manage it during a volatile period of time in the markets? That's what we do each and every Sunday. We provide you with financial advice in a language you can understand. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts. And we have been providing financial planning and investment management advice to individuals and families who live on the North Shore, the Merrimack Valley, and the Southern New Hampshire area since, believe this or not, 1968. That's right. We just celebrated our 50th anniversary of doing just that. No, I was two. Dad started the firm in 1968, started it in the back of my house. He built a little office in the back of his house. Back of our house, I should say. It was, I guess, well, he owned it. He and my mom owned the house. I was just a passenger for the ride. But we enjoyed it. And I'm a graduate of Peabody High School, former president of the Peabody Chamber of Commerce. Been here locally in Peabody for a very, very long time. And I thoroughly enjoy doing this radio show. It's been 5 years here at North Shore 104.9, where we're providing financial advice in a language you can understand each and every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. Hey, I got to give a shout out. Last weekend, I went for a remarkable experience. Two of my sons, Noah and Corey, are part of a choir or a chorus at the North Andover High School. There are three choruses. One is the concert choir. One is what's called the treble choir. And the third is what's called Scarlet and Black, which is really like their elite honors choir. And I had heard that these choirs were considered world class. And that's primarily due to their teacher, Sarah Durkin, who has really propelled the music program at North Andover High School. She is an amazing instructor with tremendous passion, and the kids absolutely adore her. How many kids are interested in singing classical pieces or pieces from other countries that are in totally different languages and different rhythms? It was really remarkable. They were invited to a showcase that was called the Boston Showcase, but it actually took place at Shore Country Day in Moscow. But they were schools that traveled in from all around the east coast of the country. In fact, North Andover High School was the only invitee from Massachusetts. And there were 900 students that competed in this thing. And it was for the opportunity to win the potential of being invited to perform at Carnegie Hall, as well as several other locations around. And I watched these three choirs perform. They each performed competitively within their own categories. And each one was more remarkable than the next. And I'm thinking, these are my kids who spend most of their days playing Mario Kart and are watching Family Guy and joking around with all sorts of whatever. It's computer games, crazy food that they eat, running around like teenage kids. Yet you put them in this setting and they put tuxedos on. And the sound was unbelievable. Unbelievable. So I watched in awe. Now, I've seen them do it a couple times, but this time it was a competitive situation. I happen to be a chaperone for them this week. And so we go to the dinner and awards ceremony that's over at the DoubleTree. And there's 900 kids in this room, plus all the chaperones. And they were all anxious to find out who won what awards in each category. And this is not a participation competition like some of those dance competitions are where everybody gets a ribbon and everybody, you know, the lowest grade you can get is a gold. Last place would be, you'd be disappointed if you got a gold because there's gold, there's high gold, then there's platinum and super platinum and all these other things. No, this is, you get gold, silver, bronze, or celebratory. Celebratory is like, thanks for your money, thanks for showing up, but you really weren't that good. Thanks for being here. So, these are elite choirs. So these guys are competing and the awards come out. Most people either got silvers or golds, and there was silver one, silver two, silver three. So you could see where you ranked amongst your other peers. And remarkably, without much notice and without much press and without much fanfare, because no one's really picked up this announcement, not only did North Andover win, they swept. They came in first place in every category, and received the invitation to perform at Carnegie Hall. And I find it fascinating that with the programs that are out there, as we talk about our sports programs and everything that's there, how this program, led by Sarah Durkin, it's a remarkable, amazing experience where your kids are transformed into a level of maturity that is unbelievable to capture the essence, the experience, the passion of what's necessary for these musical performances. Press doesn't pick it up. Not even the school picks it up, to tell you the truth. So I want to be their cheerleader. I want to get out there and let you know that this is a great thing. And I will continue to help you know when they're performing locally, because it is worth a visit. And it costs nothing to see these things. You got to see these kids perform. It is really, really remarkable. All right. When we last left, I was talking about strategies for you to be positioned appropriately for when markets go down and markets go back up. And I talked to you about the fact that if you had invested, remember, everyone talks about, oh my God, I remember 2007, which was where the market high was, and then down to 2009, it dropped so much, 45% in the S&P 500. Well, that's what this report that comes out of J.P. Morgan's Guide to the Markets, dated March 31st, 2018, says, that if you had invested 100% of your money in the S&P 500 and had been invested on October 2007, the S&P 500 peak, and you watched it drop 45% down in March of 2009, how long did it take for you to recover? From October 2007, it took 5 years for you to break even. So it wasn't a lost decade. It was a lost 5 years, if you will. Lost 5 years. But then if you stayed invested, man, did you explode? Did you accelerate like crazy from your performance following that? But that's 5 years. When you invest your money, do you plan to invest your money for 3 months? Or 6 months? Well, some people are always asking, Mark, what's Tesla going to do in the next 3 months? I have no idea. I don't even know what the market's going to do for the next year or two. But I feel pretty good that 5 years from now, market's going to be higher. 10 years from now, market's going to be higher. But how do we mitigate that? How do we squeeze out some of that risk? Well, we talk about an asset allocation portfolio, a mix of 60% in the stock market, 40% in the bond market. So if you had that mix on October 2007, and you definitely lost money, you definitely dropped in value down in March of 2009. Your initial investment might have dropped closer to 20%, not 45. But how long did it take from peak to peak for you to get back? 3 years. October 2010, you were back and whole if you had not made any changes to that S&P 500 / bond mix, 60% S&P, 40% bond mix. But here's the big one. What if you decided to go 40-60? What if you decided to put 40% of your money in the stock market and 60% of your money in the bond market? And this is purely based on an index, folks. This isn't selecting one fund over another. It's just using two unmanaged indexes. If you had your money invested October 2007 with a mix of 40% in the stock market, the S&P 500, and 60% in the aggregate bond index, yes, you would have lost some money, probably around 10 to 12%. Going from the beginning, from October 2007 to 2009, that's when we had that lowest possible time, to March of 2009. But how long did it take to get back? You were fully recovered. You were fully recovered before the year even ended in that March of 2009. 2 years. That's all it was, folks. 2 years. So I always find it fascinating when people say to me, you know, I've been doing this research in these mutual funds, the 5-year, the 10-year, the 15-year track record looks fabulous. Well, you're likely to get some amazing performance if you leave stuff alone for 5, 10, and 15 years. The more you try to trick yourself out of doing something different, it's our nature, right? It's our nature. We are creatures that want change in the food that we eat, in the clothes that we wear, the station that we listen to on the radio, whatever it might be. And so we think, well, there's always new stuff that's changing. Maybe I need to change my investment portfolio. I want to leave that, folks, to the portfolio managers that run the mutual funds. Let them make the changes and nuances within your mutual fund. My job is a financial advisor. Your job in hiring a financial advisor to keep you rational during emotional times. That is my job. Number one job. And in many cases, I'm going to encourage you to spend more than what you think you can spend. I'm going to encourage you to not be so scared. But I can do it with justification, because I know where everything is and what everything is worth, because that's what our clients do. They share everything with us. We can plot out and show the progress of how you're doing towards achieving your goals. We can show you that things aren't nearly as bad as you think they are, nor are they probably as good as the market might make it sound when the markets are going up. But we are going to keep you rational, because one other thing that came out of this JP Morgan report said that the average investor since 1998 1998. So that's 2000. That's 20 years. The 20-year annualized rate of return. If you had invested in the S&P 500 and never touched your money, you invested, let's say you put $10,000 in the S&P 500 20 years ago, from 1998 to 2007, you're up on average 7.2%. No, it's not 9 or 10 like it used to be before. You're up 7.2%. However, if you invested in a portfolio of 60% stocks, 40% bonds, you're averaging 6.4%. Now, that's just slightly less than putting 100% of your money in the stock market. That might feel a little better. The ride probably wasn't nearly as rocky. And if you invested in something that was 40-60, 40% stocks, 60% bonds, you're up 6.1% based upon the report from J.P. Morgan's Guide to the Markets as of March 31st, 2008. But here's what ends up happening. There are those that say, you know what? I'm going to throw all caution to the wind. I'm doing this on my own. And what's fascinating is that the average investor, when they look at investors that choose not to work with an advisor, average investors who choose to work on their own and build their own portfolios, the 20-year annualized return of the average investor who choose to go at it on their own, 2.6%. That's because you're making a lot of changes. You always feel like you got to do something. And every time you make a change, it's going to cost you something. Maybe it's a commission. Maybe it's a trade cost. Maybe it's taxes, whatever it could be. That's barely beating inflation at 2.1% over the past 20 years. So I caution you. If you're going to try to do this on your own and build your own investment strategy, don't try to crush it. Build a portfolio that is built to last and leave it alone. If you have under $2 million, you really have no business trading stocks. Buy funds, buy exchange-traded funds, buy a bond portfolio, bond funds, whatever it might be. But more than anything else, if you have under $2 million to invest, why risk the rest of your life and wonder whether you'll have enough money to survive on or whether you will have more than you need? I'd encourage you to visit with a certified financial planner, someone that has that gold standard credential. We have that at Friedman Financial, and I'd be honored if you'd be willing to come in and visit with us to schedule a free initial consultation so that we can show you what real financial planning means. Yeah, you've heard this thing of, well, they all work for a fee. They probably get that 1% fee thing. Well, I think you really need to understand what that 1% buys you. And if the advisor that you work with is telling you that it buys you for better asset allocation, for the ability to meet better investment professionals, for their investing expertise, they're pulling your leg. They don't know any better than anybody else does. In reality, if you're paying somebody 1%, of that 1%, probably 30% at the very most is worth their investment advice and guidance. The remaining 66% needs to be your comfort in saying, this person understands my entire situation. I'm willing to talk with them about buying or leasing a home, financing my car, moving to a retirement community, asking me what to do when my mom passes away, or the transfer of assets to somebody else, helping me make a decision as to how best do I pay for my kids' education, or where should I take money from my investments or my bank account or whatever to support my life in retirement. Those are the critical questions that need to be asked. You need to make sure that you know answers on how do we handle the second home that we have in New Hampshire, or can we move down to Florida? Should we live in Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Florida, Texas, Tennessee? Where should we live? What's best for us? What's best for our family? What will allow me to live in the most satisfied way for the remainder of my life? Because you know what, folks? When you choose retirement, whether it's 65, whether it's 70, chances are you have 30 years to live out your life. And it's all without a paycheck. And you, for the past 30 years prior, maybe 35 years prior, you were living off that paycheck. Have you saved enough? Have you prepared yourself for what life will be like for the next 30 years? Because I can assure you of this. The life that you just spent over the past 30 years will be far different from the next 30 years that are coming. And I will tell you this, it may seem terrifying, but it's going to be awesome. It is great. You have so much to look forward to, so much to do that you've never done before. Take advantage of it, and I don't want you to feel like you're handcuffed and you can't. If now's the time to get serious about your financial planning, I'd welcome the opportunity to give our office a call. 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. We are there every day. We are here on the radio, though, 8 to 9 a.m. each and every Sunday morning. If you'd like our free newsletter, give our office a call. I mean, go to my website for our free newsletter, FriedmanFinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com. Scroll to the bottom of the page, any page. Just put in your name. Put in your email address. We'll get you attached to our free weekly newsletter that comes out each and every Friday at 10:30 in the morning. You'll be part of the 7,500 subscribers that receive it. You won't get phone calls from me. I promise you, I will not bug you. But when the time is right to get serious about getting your financial house in order, give our office a call. We'll look forward to hearing from you, and I'll look forward to being back with you next Sunday. Hope you all have a wonderful weekend. My name is Mark Friedman. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Thanks for tuning into Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. During the show, specific investments may have been discussed. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Please consult a certified financial planner, tax professional, or attorney to determine what is appropriate for you. Consider your investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of an investment company before investing. That's because investing involves risk, including a loss of principal. A prospectus contains this and other information about mutual funds, variable annuities, and variable annuity subaccounts. Prospectuses should be read carefully before making an investment. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment and financial planning advice is offered through Mark's firm, Friedman Financial, which is a registered investment advisor and a separate entity from LPL. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next Sunday at 8 a.m.
The prior show was a paid program that does not express the views, opinions, or beliefs of North Shore 104.9, the station management, its employees, or staff.